This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, Wei Ting and I are reviewing the Mr. McMahon series on Netflix with 6 straight days of reviews. The Double Shot will be coming back on Friday, September the 27th. We will be doing a free review of episode 1, and then episodes 2 through 6 will be covered exclusively for Post Wrestling Cafe members. Plus, this month, MCU Later is back covering Agatha All Along, and Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson have you covered for New Japan's Destruction in Kobe. PostWrestlingCafe.com.
Here's a sample of a free podcast from the Post Wrestling Cafe. $6 gets you through the door at postwrestlingcafe.com.
As if they don't have too much on their plates, the Kings of Combat Sports podcast, John and Wade. They talk about the things they did that day. The land of the work of Triple H.
We want to SmackDown.
Hello, everyone, buddy. Welcome to Rewind to SmackDown. John Pollock and Wei Ting here with you on Friday evening. How are you, Wei?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Never been better.
John is like, he texted me saying, I'm going to be a few minutes late. And John is never really late for these. He's usually earlier than me, even. So if I know he's late, he's probably had quite the rough time with this show.
Yep, definitely. I don't want to get into it. It's just been a nightmare tonight. So let's just dive into things. I'm ready to talk and about any and all topics. We will be getting to your calls later on. So jump on into the StreamYard room. I might be in a coma by then. Wei Ting will carry us through till the end.
Hey, by the way, those of you that are in the Post Wrestling Cafe are watching us live over through the cafe link. Thank you very much for being patrons. We're actually going to be releasing this one for free afterwards. So those of you that are listening afterwards on the free feed, this is what we do every single Friday. After SmackDown, we go live. Having easy times watching these shows, sometimes not, but you get us every single Friday live in the Post Wrestling Cafe on YouTube. With your $6 subscription, you get these shows every single Friday.
Yes. So thank you all for checking out the show, whether on the Post Wrestling Cafe or this special free edition on the free feed. But let us dive into some news items. On Thursday, Janelle Grant's representatives did a rare media availability. They have not done one of these throughout this whole process. This involved her lawyer, Ann Callis, as well as one of her new PR reps as well that was on the call. They fielded questions from the media. And here is just a brief statement from Ann Callis off the top, describing the case and what Janelle Grant has been going through.
Janelle Grant is a survivor of incomprehensible abuse, sexual assault, and human trafficking at the hands of Vince McMahon, John Laurinaitis, and WWE. It takes immense strength to speak out against Goliaths, and she has courageously come forward, not just to address her own suffering, but also to act for those who are afraid to speak out. She is also a human being. She is smart, kind, and compassionate. But because of the extreme cruelty, degradation, exploitation, and violence she was subjected to on a near daily basis for more than 2 years, she now suffers from severe post-traumatic stress disorder, suicidal ideation, and the inability to leave her home for weeks at a time. Janelle's story is an important one, and we hope Netflix docuseries does it justice. Her experience is an integral to an accurate and full retelling of the story of the WWE and Mr. McMahon. While Janelle didn't participate in the Netflix docuseries, we hope it shines a light on the abhorrent actions of McMahon, frequently on WWE property, and it portrays the realities of his abusive and exploitative behavior. Many of the stories in the last few months have not portrayed her in the way she deserves to be portrayed, as a survivor of human trafficking and sexual abuse.
So that was Ann Callis, the attorney for Janelle Grant. And sort of the backdrop of this presser was the fact that the Netflix series is dropping next week. it wasn't as if they had some announcement to make or that I can say there was anything really new uncovered here. It was interesting just the fact that they have not done one of these before where they have opened it up to the media for questions, but it did seem like from listening to this, this was about a 25-30 minute virtual presser. They were very careful not to knock the Netflix series. They stated they have not seen the series themselves. And as you heard there, that there was outreach to Janelle Grant. She's not in the series as we have reported on, but many times Ann Callis stated that Janelle Grant has a story and she will tell it on her time. And they made that very clear. Like, there will come a time that you are going to hear from Janelle Grant. It's not going to be on this particular series. Other things that came up, the fact that they are still under a stay as the federal investigation is going on through December 11th. They really want to expedite this civil process. Like, it seems like it is weighing heavily on Janelle Grant, and they want this process to move more quickly than it is. And beyond that, that was about it. But also just like putting into words like what Janelle Grant has been going through. I think for a lot of people, Janelle Grant is this idea, and people are kind of divorced that this is also a person that has not only, outlined what she has gone through, but just being in the public eye as she has since January, that alone is an incredible amount of pressure. And as she mentioned, like an inability to leave her home for long stretches of time, suicidal ideation, like these are obviously a lot of trauma that is associated with this. But that was, I would say, the key things coming out of this press conference.
I could see them maybe wanting to get ahead of, you know, whatever the story is going to be told through this Vince McMahon documentary series, maybe wanting to, you know, create some form of relationship with the media so that they can at least get at least their part of their side out there, you know, ahead of, I'm sure, what is going to be a bit of a media circus after this documentary series drops. I'm curious to see if we'll hear from Ann Callis afterwards. You know, I'm curious to know certainly about Janelle Grant's opinion on the way that this story will be presented in the documentary. And I have to think, because they have now formed this sort of like press conference type of platform for themselves, we might get follow-up through this sort of representation. So yeah, I thought they were actually very open with like the amount of questions that they were willing to accept from various members of the media. And I completely understand why she would not want to participate in the documentary, knowing that there is definitely enough reason to question like the sort of bias that you might get from a Netflix documentary that is at one time, at least, you know, executively produced or at least had some involvement in some official capacity from the WWE. So I totally understand why she would not want to participate.
Yeah, and they would not go much beyond that very clear messaging that they had about the Janelle has her story. She will state it on her time. They were not going to go into details about what that back and forth was like. What was the level of participation that Janelle may have been interested in speaking with? Like, they never said on this thing that Janelle refused to be part of this, but they were not going to get into details. And if you listen to this, like, this was not them casting shade at Netflix. As you state, next week, the episodes will be out. They will have a chance to review them and see them, and maybe they will have a different reaction. I don't know if they will speak publicly. They will definitely be asked. I promise you that about what their reaction is. But yeah, there's going to be a ton of attention on these episodes. And not to go from like such a serious story to promoting something that we are doing, but next week, we will be obviously covering the Mr. McMahon series. What we're going to be doing is Wei and I are going to end up doing 6 straight days of shows covering each episode, beginning next Friday with a free episode covering episode 1. Then for you members of the Post Wrestling Cafe that are listening to this on the cafe, you will get our reviews of episodes 2 through 6 starting next Saturday, and daily releases covering 1 show per episode of the McMahon series.
John and Brandon Thurston will also be talking about the series, at least the first and the last episodes on Pollock and Thurston, which will be airing at a special time of Thursday this week. So
yes,
plenty of coverage for the series all week long.
All right, let's move on to Tony Khan, and he was on Busted Open Radio, and way we've had a lot of numbers. We've had red zones. We've had the 5-yard line. We've had 90% chance of an announcement within the next month. Well, he was ready to drop another percentage while being interviewed by Dave LaGreca and discussing the pending media rights deal.
Oh, I know there's been a lot of reports and things. I have not done any of the leaking, with all due respect to the fine people at the Puck establishment and the Puck people. I didn't talk to them, but I know they've been reporting things that are very interesting. But, you know, there's a lot of reports and rumors, but I have not confirmed, and Warner Brothers has not confirmed anything officially, but it's an exciting time for AEW and Warner Brothers Discovery, who are also here in New York City, and the great people, David Zaslav, Bruce Campbell, all the great people at Warner Brothers Discovery have been so great to us. And I think we have a really exciting future there. I can say with 100% certainty, AEW and TBS and TNT are here to stay for a long time.
All right. So 100% that AEW, TBS and TNT are here for the long term, meaning they're not going to go out of business, the three of them. You would, in theory, take from that that they will be in partnership with one another. Also got three greats in there as well.
Oh, yes. Is that the the new thing, the counting the greats?
Well, it's, you know, things are great. Things are looking good. Yeah.
I mean, for a Tony Khan answer, this felt at
pretty
least
damn definitive. I mean, this is not that we're in the red zone or anything. It's like we are guaranteed an announcement for TNT and TBS. What more will there be on top of this? I think that is for further speculation. But like AEW is in a very advantageous position. I think when you're looking at the numbers that are being thrown around here, you know, this, if you were to state like 5 years ago that they would be on the precipice of a deal anywhere in the vicinity of $170 million. I mean, that is a big win for this company.
So did you take from this answer that Tony was in some way subtly confirming that figure?
No, I mean, not.
Because I didn't.
No. But
he said it was interesting. That's about as much as he said.
He was not disputing anything, and specifically bringing up the Puck report. I think if there was anything he would want to dismiss, he could easily do that. And again, John O'Rand has stated, you know, it's in the ballpark. It's in the ballpark of $170 million.
Moved on from end zones to ballparks.
We have covered every analogy. I mean, is this
three-point line or field goal line, free throw line maybe?
Yeah, the finalization only requires a putter.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. But there's going to 100% be a deal with WBD. I guess we can stop. I don't know. Well, is he denouncing the idea that he might have an outside deal other than with WBD?
No. Like again, with that answer, I mean it's certainly not anything that you are. Other than I think everyone realizes the TNT TBS component, which is not going to come as a shock to anyone, looks to be pretty set in stone. Right. All right, moving on. One final clip. Renee Paquette did her latest up close sit down interview with FTR. And this was the first time that Cash Wheeler spoke about his legal incident that went down in 2023. This had the alleged incident was believed to have happened in July of 2023, and the news came out several weeks later. And what Cash Wheeler was accused of was veering onto the shoulder of a highway and flashing a semi-automatic handgun at another driver. And this person who was in the car, they reported Cash Wheeler, or I should say they reported the incident and took a photo of his Jeep and then identified Cash Wheeler during a police lineup that they had assembled. And I mean, this guy that accused him of this, like, put in a sworn affidavit, and Cash Wheeler maintained his innocence throughout this whole thing, but he was facing up to 5 years in jail. Like, this is a third degree felony in Florida. The case was completely dropped earlier this year as the state of Florida was not going to move forward with it. So this is all now behind Cash Wheeler. But here is just he spoke about this at length in the interview, but here's just a short summary of it.
I told my lawyers when it happened. Like, I would not take any sort of plea deal. I would not plead guilty to any charge whatsoever that, like, I was not guilty and I was not going to take any sort of plea. And, like, so, like, I did what I could. Like, when we got back from Wembley, I, the day that I landed, I paid thousands of dollars out of pocket to drive to Tampa to take a polygraph test.
Oh my gosh.
Which I passed. They're like, the ones that want to think I'm guilty are going to think it no matter what. The ones that want to believe me, they believe me the whole time. Yeah. But like, yeah, I paid thousands out of pocket to take a polygraph.
That was Cash Wheeler. Just a small amount of his answer. But I mean, this was someone that, you know, if you listen to it, he was adamant. He did not do anything here. And he was, number one, I think just on the principle of it, he was not going to accept the plea deal, even if it meant getting out of the worst case scenario. But, I mean, you get a felony on your record. Like, he noted the fact I could have been fired by AEW because I cannot be taken overseas. It's going to affect my work. It's going to affect Dax Harwood. And said he got to the point where he thought all of this attention from this legal case was going to do harm to Dax, that he was willing to just walk away from wrestling entirely. He was just going to walk away from all of this. And yeah, he outlined here getting a polygraph test just as kind of getting his own evidence. Like, not to say like a polygraph is necessarily admissible, but he noted that. But the fact that he was going to get every ounce of evidence he could here. And yeah, that was his side. He hasn't spoken too much about this other than they've addressed some live crowds and just noting he was, you know, he was not guilty of this action. But this was the first time he actually spoke about the case, which has been, that was a big burden on him for about 9 months.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I would say, like, I think it's tough for us to definitively maybe speak on exactly what happened because none of us were there. We can only go by, you know, what the result is, I suppose, and also just our own personal feelings. But I hear this, and my personal opinion is that I believe him, you know? Like, I didn't know that he, I didn't know he did the polygraph. I didn't know that he, well, he's telling us that he was willing to essentially, like, accept the worst because he wasn't willing to accept a plea bargain, which is at least, like, pretty damning, like, I guess, conviction, you know, that you would hear from somebody who truly believes that they're innocent. So, I mean, again, none of us were actually there at the scene, but at least, like, in terms of my opinion, and my personal feelings towards Cash Wheeler, I tend to believe him. And I wonder how many people before hearing a clip like this felt this strongly. Like, I almost get the sense that this was sort of a lingering reputation on him, that, like, somehow he was somebody who got away with doing something like this. And I at least for me, like, I wouldn't think that at all now. In fact, like, I believe, like, Dax was saying, like, you know, hey, like, let's give him a hand. Like, remember, like, when he actually,
it was in,
like,
Toronto, right, where they did they did it once.
Might have been, was it Toronto or was it BC, maybe?
Maybe you're right.
Hard to remember at this point. But anyway, like, I remember that being kind of met with, like, a little bit of discomfort because, like, what exactly are we cheering here? But if you are accepting, you know, certainly from Dax Harwood talking about his best friend, like, that story, that this is a guy who's truly innocent and was, you know, implicated in all of this and has managed to escape it, of course you would, you know, celebrate that. So
how does this get that far would be my question, because what we had to go on, like, this was a charge that was filed. You had the accuser that gave a sworn affidavit onto what happened. And I mean, it becomes very difficult if you're someone like Daniel Wheeler here in that prove something that did not happen. If that is, in fact, the case, like, that's a really tough position to be in. I would just say, like, if that is, in fact, what happened, like, he was completely falsely accused, like, there should absolutely be punishments for people that make the, like...
But even that's hard to prove. I mean, again, you can't go by polygraph. All you can really go by is just, like, opinion. There are many cases like this, not just involving this, but if we're talking about something more serious, like sex crimes that are out there that are only the cases of two people that are unfortunately in this sort of vague territory. So, again, like, this is not a definitive, like, you know, answer for exactly what happened, but we can at least on these podcasts speak about our own personal opinion about how it makes us feel.
Yeah, it's, you know, the... rereading the affidavit today, like it was stated that the accuser took a picture afterwards of the Jeep, but like that's not a photo of the incident in question. Like that's a photo of a Jeep. It's not like to my like in me reading this, like this was just he took a photo of the Jeep after this alleged action occurred. So that's really all you had to go by in terms of evidence was that this Jeep was in fact there. It's a tricky story for sure, but this was one where
soon enough there will be cameras on every single light post. The satellites will be able to catch everything. So you know, don't you worry, everybody. We're already capturing all of this stuff on surveillance.
Miro is apparently requesting his release from AEW. This report came from Sean Ross Sapp at Fightful. Miro has had a very odd relationship with AEW that has now gone on for 4 years. I would say there was a good first half of this relationship, and the last 2 years has been essentially non-existent. I mean, he has wrestled very, very sparingly, has not wrestled at all this year. And the interesting part is that in the Fightful report, he signed an extension around the spring of 2022 and would have, you know, like around almost 2 years left on his contract. And this is the question, like if you are AEW and you're paying, first of all, you're paying him all of this money, you're not getting any return on your investment. Like, do you just cut bait on a relationship that has just obviously not been to either side's benefit? Or do you believe, like, listen, what are contracts for if we're just going to cut somebody and allow them to go? I'm sure there would be interest in a WWE of going after a Miro. It becomes like a tough case when you have, like, you are in a wrestling war, and are you just going to ignore your contract? Like, you are paying him. Like, it's not a dispute over, like, we're not, it's just, there's no side is benefiting from this other than Miro is making money through this contract.
Yeah, but you can argue not appearing on TV, not being used to create, I guess, impressive moments for your legacy, for your career, to improve your stock in the industry during your prime years. The man is 38. He was in AEW from 34 to 38. Those are prime earnings.
Very important years. Very important
years. For a professional wrestler. To essentially waste those 4 years. I'm not going to say it was a complete waste. There were real glimpses of, like, you know, specialness to him. But I do have to disagree with, like, the idea that maybe the first half was good. Because I would say the first year was not good. Doing the video game stuff with Kip Sabian, that was not good. He maybe had one good year of the four.
I wouldn't say he was locked into that Kip Sabian stuff though for the full year. Like, he did get into the Redeemer role and doing those promos. Like, there was a period there.
When we're talking about a batting average, I'm going to say maybe, I don't know.
I'm not going to argue that this has not been a success. This has not been a success, but there have been glimpses of it. Maybe saying half would be overstating it.
Yeah. So it's strange. I think maybe it calls to some attention of, like, I don't know, Tony's relationship with people that, like, maybe don't want to be there and how he might treat them. And I kind of agree that with, like, the idea that you don't just release somebody because they ask for it. That sets a bad precedent, you know, and just almost encourages people to just, like, I don't know, demand the same. So I guess you just kind of wonder, like, you know, could he have been used at least in some way, you know, to, like, push somebody else to have a Daniel Garcia beat a Miro in order to just, well, actually Garcia is just even another vague case, I suppose. But I don't know, somebody who is sticking around, Darby, you know, beating Miro. Although, did he do that? I don't remember. Yeah.
It is the timing of it as well is, you know, in the report, it was like spring of 2022 that Miro re-signed with AEW, signed an extension. And
was that when it was a good part of his run or not?
Well, it was a very interesting time in the business because in July, you get Vince McMahon's first resignation from WWE. It's a gigantic change in WWE. Okay. And I think if you are going to have talents that look at whether the grass is greener, that's the time period that is going to be shifting people's attitudes as well.
Oh, you can argue that's even more so now, you know, seeing how good, I guess, the WWE has been doing.
Let's go to the final story here, and that is the AEW Dynamite ratings from Wednesday night. They were number 2 in primetime on cable behind what were they behind on Wednesday? I'll pull up everything here. They were second behind Gutfeld on Fox News, a must watch for Fox News viewers.
But Dynamite, you're talking about like in the demo. They were after Fox News. Who are the 18 to 49 aged people that are watching Fox News? Gutfeld,
young men, I would say.
Okay,
all right. Young men. So the show Dynamite did 687,000 viewers, 0.22 in the demo, that coming courtesy of wrestling, WrestleNomics and Programming Insider. It was down 4% in viewership but the core demo grew by 7%, and they were ahead of MTV's The Challenge, Battle of Eras going down.
Mm.
Yes.
The Challenge is always, the strong contender in these ratings wars.
You know what they were also up against on Wednesday? The two-hour season premiere of Survivor.
Okay. Are you following this season?
I got 45 minutes in. It's too long. No one needs a 90-minute weekly episode of Survivor, and no one needs a two-hour premiere of Survivor. It's too long. Dude, this season...
How about a three-hour edition of Survivor?
No.
Multiple times.
I told my wife, if they expand to 3 hours, I'm done with this show. Half the contestants are podcast hosts on this season.
Of course. Well, half the world.
My wife told me this was your season. This was your season. You could have done. I was like, yeah.
Hold on a second. You're saying they're only allowing podcast hosts or people just...
No, I'm just saying that there's a number of podcast hosts on there. There's a guy from Pod Save America. There's someone who does a Survivor watch along podcast.
Gotcha. Well, half the world has a podcast now, so
I know it's hard. It's hard to avoid them. But there you go. That was the Dynamite numbers. The peak viewership was Cassidy and Jericho, but the peak in the 18 to 49 demo was the BCC beatdown of Private Party and the start of Ricochet versus Beast Mortos. Big number in Canada. They did 120,000 viewers on TSN2, which was up a cool 70% from last week. So these numbers are just insane here in Canada. They're up, they're down, but there you go. Those were the numbers for Wednesday's program. All of your news can be found at postwrestling.com, and we're going to be diving into SmackDown. But a heads up,
let's not forget they might have been going up against Survivor, but maybe the most stiff competition of all. Agatha All Along episodes 1 and 2 dropped on Wednesday, and of course we have Rich Finn and WH Park at MCU later in the Post Wrestling Cafe breaking it all down for you guys. So listen to that right now, and they even throw in some MC news in there. So every single week you're going to get reviews of Agatha All Along from those two, along with a number of very special guests.
Exciting stuff. How many? 10 episodes?
9 episodes. Yes.
9. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well. Check
across
it out.
I believe across like 7 weeks, I think, because they're doing like double drops for the beginning and the end.
Okay. So. I did get to see the first two episodes of the Queen of Villains, the Dump Matsumoto series. I did not think I was gonna have any time to watch this, but the first two episodes, like there are some naturally like some, you know, creative changes that they make, but I think a lot of people that were fans of All Japan Women are gonna love this. And if you're not, you are not going to be lost in a style of wrestling or characters that you're not familiar with. Like the key is obviously Dump Matsumoto, but Chigusa Nagayo, who was actually a consultant on the series and worked on it, she's like pretty much as much of a main character, and these two are so attached, as you will see throughout the rest of the series. I'm only two episodes in. I won't go into any spoiler territory, but one of the matches in the second episode that it builds to, I ended up watching the actual match afterwards just to like watch it. It's like the costuming and the venue, like they do a really great job with that. I mean, they certainly add a lot of drama to the episode, but I'm really happy with this series so far. Like I just thought it was excellent, and I was not looking for more hours of stuff to watch this week, but I figured, you know what, I've got some time, I'll at least watch a little bit of episode one, and I ended up watching two episodes last night.
Brian in the chat room asked, John, did you watch it dubbed or subbed?
Dubbed or subbed, like subtitled. I watched it subtitled.
Subtitle,
yeah, because Alexa Bliss is doing the voice of I believe it's Maki Ueda, I think.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. I usually watch like anything in its like original language with subtitles, but I am kind of curious to hear like how the dubbed versions of these wrestlers might sound.
Yeah, I only watched it subtitled, so yeah, that is right. How I watched it. So yeah, in fact, WWE put up a playlist of the two Dump Matsumoto matches and some Crush Gals matches on their WWE Vault channel. So They have officially promoted this series more than the Vince McMahon series on Netflix.
It should tell you a whole lot.
Yes.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MCU Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. Tag us in a photo of yourself wearing our merch on social media, and I'll even send you a signed postcard while supplies last. That's chop-tees.com/post-wrestling.
On to SmackDown tonight. Huge audience. On the broadcast, they were announcing over 14,000. The last number from WrestleTix, 13,793 at the Golden One Center in Sacramento, California. Just incredible numbers that they are pulling to these shows.
Their 39th TV sellout of the year, 58th sellout of the year, as announced on the broadcast.
Yeah, 14,000 people came to this arena to watch the two biggest stars meet hundreds of miles away at a football field. I mean, count me in.
I mean, listen, it's taking us back to closed circuit viewing parties, I guess. I'm sure they had a great time.
The Bloodline are coming through security and they're getting a pat down. So Jacob Fatu took security into his own hands and just murdered the security members. So that was our medal.
I need to hear about a fine for this, okay? Because you can't just put your hands on. Well, imagine if you did this at TSA. You know,
yeah, try this at the airport. It'll probably go well for you.
Mm-mm. Yeah. Now, Jacob also like got to deliver a line here. Like, what did he say? He said, like, who else wants a pat down? And I thought he did a great job. Like, this was a show without Solo Sikoa. So like you were relying on at least two of your three remaining Bloodline members to do a little bit of extra talking. I thought two of the three did really well. And you can guess who the two of the three are.
Well, we'll get to Tama Tonga. He has found a voice for his promo style. LA Knight and Andrade is up first for the United States Championship. Early on, the message and the blunt force trauma are both attempted. Could you have more opposite names for finishing maneuvers? The blunt force trauma, the message.
Are those the sort of like opposites of each other?
One sounds incredibly life-threatening, and the other sounds like some 14-year-old like writing a poem.
Hold on a second. Which one sounds more threatening? Because I would suggest
the message.
Blunt force trauma sounds like a sandwich. You know, would you like a BFT? It sounds like something you can order at Dairy Queen. You know, I don't necessarily think it's devastating.
Okay, you go into a Burger King at 2 a.m. and yell, "Can someone give me some blunt force trauma?" and see what happens.
Well, okay. I would say neither are the best.
Okay.
But
okay, they're both terrible. Andrade runs Knight into the post. They go through two commercial breaks, and then Andrade, who amazingly, they always get out of the way of that first moonsault, but always lands the second one, hits the double knees. Knight captures Andrade on his shoulder for a power slam and does the leaping elbow drop. Blunt force trauma with a Happy Meal is countered with a schoolboy as Andrade hits the spinning elbow. That gets a near fall. They really relied heavily on near falls here, but the crowd was getting into it. And then it's time to land this plane. Andrade is seated on the top turnbuckle, and LA Knight runs across thinking about Shelton Benjamin, who he just was hearing about on this week's Rewind Away, does his leap up to the top. Slips on that top rope. So he goes for it again. He slips again. And they're like, oh dear, this one's not going to happen. So Andrade calls the audible, misses with the missile drop kick, and walks right into a blunt force trauma. And the match ends at, wait for it, 17 minutes and 8 seconds as LA Knight, who has a busted up eye after this as well, gets the win. And then Knight very reluctantly shakes hands with Andrade. This was a very uncomfortable fist bump turned handshake.
Yeah, the double slip at the end from Knight, probably the most memorable part of this match. Now, if it was truly an audible from Andrade to say, hey, like, I'm not selling for whatever you're trying to give me right now. You just slipped twice. I'm going to give you a high cross, and then you can reverse me afterwards. If that was an audible from him and the two of them, excellent work. Really, really impressive. If that was some on the fly thinking. I mean, it turned this match into like something that was still sensical by the end of it, and turned a mistake into maybe almost like an impressive element of the match. So I thought it was a really great opening match. Again, I don't exactly know how much LA Knight has like improved as a technical wrestler since his recent ascent, but he's gained so much favor from the crowd, which in turn has probably greatly heightened his aura and maybe his own personal level of confidence, that like everything he does, it's not that physically impressive, but everything is that much more effective. Everything is that much more over, and everything is just like that much more effective. So yeah, I thought this was really good. Did you notice, John, the second segment of this 3-segment match was entirely shot on that Lee fitting, you know, ringside camera?
Yeah, they did the floor panoramic shot.
It was just the entire segment, which was
I didn't realize it was the whole segment, but it was noticeable. It has kind of just blended in now, but how did you feel? Was it too distracting, or did it work for you?
In this case, because I did pay attention to it and I was noticing how long it was, it did kind of take away a little bit from the match. But I also recognize I might be an exception, you know, compared to your common your average viewer, I should say. But I also do start thinking now about like the other cameramen and how bored they might be during those moments. And
why don't we get our name at the end of the show?
Well, even the cameraman doesn't get his name, but like at least that main cameraman gets to do something. You have like, you know, a bunch of other cameramen that basically they could go on a bathroom break if they really wanted to. So
I hope
they should just be allowed to like take their cell phones out. I hope that they're at least given warning that, hey, we don't need you guys for these next 10 minutes.
Nia Jax and Tiffany Stratton are in the back, and Stratton is going on about Bayley or Naomi having to leave SmackDown, and Jax warns both are coming for my title, and if you lose, Tiffany, you should consider leaving SmackDown as well. Carmelo catches up with Andrade backstage, and he says, "What happened out there? I haven't seen someone choke like that since the Kings lost to the Lakers." And man, Andrade, a loyalist to the Lakers. And they get into this huge brawl. The refs have to interject. And Corey Graves, "I don't think their story is over yet." No, Corey, it's not. If you thought the best of 5 was the end of this, folks, we're going into overtime. We're going to keep this one going.
Overtime, John. Like, we're, you know, like to use a Tony Khan analogy, this, I don't know, what is this? The 10th yard line, whatever you call it. I don't know football.
We have never had a best of series in wrestling where the person has already achieved the title match and now is continuing the series.
Well, listen, this is an infinite series, okay? Like, they are advertising. Like, I almost feel like they're just like playing along with the joke at this point, because they're not telling us how, like, where this definitively ends. They're just kind of surprising us with like more and more parts. And I mean, I guess, like, I don't know, like maybe convention would tell you that this ends in 7, but I'm not so sure now. I think this can go like,
everyone assumed it ended in 5 when he's okay. Andrade won, he gets the title shot.
I'm expecting at least 15
minimum. That's the least we could ask for. All right, now it's time to take a break from Sacramento. We're leaving the Golden One Center, and we check in at Georgia Tech. So we are going into Atlanta, the hometown of Cody Rhodes, and where Roman Reigns played football. And we get
I didn't know they had this in common.
Yeah, I mean, this is all legit here. It's a tie that both men have to the city, which is where Bad Blood is taking place. Mm-hmm. And so on Thursday night, they met so covertly that Roman required a motorcade of 7 vehicles to escort him to the stadium. Cody, a mere man, a man of the people, just drives up like a minimum 6-figure vehicle that he is driving here.
Ford Mustang.
That'd, you know what? Cool. Man of the people. And they meet at the 50-yard line. And Rain says, "This is where I shed blood, sweat, and tears many times. This is my field, therefore it's my stadium, and if it's my stadium, it's my city." And he asks Cody, "What have you done for my city?" Cody just looks at him and says, "Bitch, WTBS 605, that's what I've done. Have you ever heard of Techwood Studios, Center Stage?" And
well,
then
he didn't do anything.
Yeah, it's like, okay, you're a Nepo baby is what you're telling us here. You have done nothing here in the city. You moonsaulted onto Wardlow. That's what you did in Atlanta. Then he says, then he brings up the Omni, now called the State Farm Arena. Now, I don't know if he meant to say that, like, the major wrestling building was the Omni. Now the major building is the State Farm Arena. These are not the same place. These are different buildings.
Is it even in the same location? Like, did they tear down the Omni to build this building? Like,
that's a good question. I don't know if they're the same location, but the Omni was demolished in 1997. So, I feel we could give him a mulligan on this one, but the way it was worded. And he explains multiple generations of his family have bled for this city. You played football here. Thank you. Then you went back to the beach. That was actually maybe the best line of this thing.
Love that
he calls
line.
This his thank you for playing football here.
Thank you for playing football for me. Thank you for doing my dirty work, basically.
This is my home. Reigns says, Cody, you have everything to lose. I have nothing to lose. After they took Jimmy from me, they took my wise man, my bloodline, and my Ulafala. And I'm a man with no country. And Cody warned him before WrestleMania last year that you would be standing here, a chief without a tribe. And look at that. He looks around and says, you know, there's a tribal chief. It's not you. There's a WWE champion, and it's not you. Roman cuts to the chase, says, what do you want, Cody? Cody says, I want your word, that you'll have my back so I can have yours. And Reigns gives him his word, but when all is said and done, I'm taking back what's mine, as he eyes the championship, and Cody says, it's not yours to take. And then Roman is ready to leave the 50-yard line and realize, man, this was a lot of travel for what could definitely have been a FaceTime call. But Cody stands in front of him, and Roman says, you're in my way. So Cody steps back, and Roman looks at him. You're in my way in life. I wanted like an orchestra to be playing as Roman walked out of Georgia Tech.
Yeah, I'm keeping that line. I'm going to remember that line, and then maybe someday, John, if I happen to walk in your doorway in your same path, you could say, you're in my way, and I will say, you're in my way in life.
I promise you I will use this line one day in real life. This was maybe the most expensive on-location shoot WWE has done. I thought it was great for this one time. I saw a lot of people speculating, like, is this going to be the future of, like, WWE promo shoots and stuff? I do not want these to be a regular thing. I thought it was a great idea. Yeah, listen, you had a tie-in here, very well produced. It was too slick.
They can't afford to do this every single week. Okay,
they can afford to do a lot. But
they refuse to. Okay, if Mark Shapiro has anything to say about it, I don't think they'll spend that much. But for special occasions, when you're trying to push to the main, one of the main events of the pay-per-view in the city, in a setting that makes sense to make that event feel that much bigger, this was perfect. This was great. And at this point, we can safely say, forget Elizabeth and Macho Man, forget Lita, Matt Hardy, all this stuff. This is the greatest love story that the WWE has ever told. The tension that exists on screen between these two. It was magical the first time. It was magical when they met up like about a year ago. Remember on that edition of SmackDown when Cody went from Raw to SmackDown and they just had that face-to-face? Just staring at each other. You're just like, oh, I can't wait for this. And even now, when they're supposedly on the same side, the tension is still there and it is magnificent. There's something special about this chemistry. I think it's a defining rivalry of this particular era of the WWE. And
how much fan fiction is going to be written out of this one image?
There's already novels about this, I'm sure. You know, like Google it, John, in your spare time after this. But the setting was absolutely perfect. I think they captured it beautifully using this sort of like top-notch production crew. And but it wasn't just pretty pictures. Like, I don't think they just relied on like, you know, their special like expensive cameras and their drone shots and all that stuff. There was actual substance to this interaction. I thought it was well scripted and like well delivered. For the first time, you had Roman Reigns in this scene, essentially like vocalize about what he's endured and what he's lost. And he's got no family, no wise man, no Ulafala. He's almost like admitting vulnerability, like for the first time. And I think it makes him a lot more likable. He's also essentially surrendering to Cody's lead here, you know, asking Cody, what do you want? And Cody, I think, like, continues to just like be an example of like the best kind of baby face. You know, he's not an anti-hero like Steve Austin. He's not a sort of, I'm going to make fun of my opponent and then make the audience laugh type of baby face like The Rock. He's just like purely good. And I think you can tell, like, this man is greatly influenced by the media that he's consumed. And we know that he is a big comics fan, probably a big movie fan. We know that as well. And like, these are almost like the best like archetypes of great movie heroes, because they're just, you know, they it's like the best of like a Steve Rogers distilled into like this sort of character. He represents good, but he also doesn't take shit and never like makes he's never made fun of by the opponent, and he never lets other people get away with it. Yet he doesn't have to like lower himself to like their level either. So I thought this was great, you know, and what a way to make Atlanta feel special. Imagine you lived in this city. Wouldn't you get so much FOMO hearing them like give so much special attention to where you live and not being able to go to this?
Yeah, I was waiting for Cody to just lean in and whisper, "Stadium Stampede. That's what I want."
That would be great. Well, they got war games.
Could you, how entertaining would it have been to watch this like as a fly on the wall without the special effects, without the music, and just watch them like shoot this without any of that? Like, they just have to do this totally dialed into these characters. I mean, this is
I'm sure it was like a movie scene. Like, if you ever walked past a movie shoot, I'm sure it was just like that.
This was probably the most noteworthy thing on the show. It was quite the production of WWE. The thing I liked the most about this was the fact that Kevin Owens became the focus for the second hour of SmackDown. It was such a natural that as soon as they cut to Kevin Owens after this, that's the first person you see. It's like, of course, this guy should be furious at this. This ties into all of the teases with Cody Rhodes and why he was so upset at the fact that Roman Reigns is back here and was expecting to go for the title again, and now here his best friend is teaming with this guy. I thought this was just a great there would be a time when this would not have even been given a thought.
Yeah, this is the great thing about this, like, I guess several years long reign of the Bloodline, is that you've kind of created long-term story arcs for everybody that's been attached to them, you know, and that principally, well, obviously that includes everybody who was attached to the Bloodline, like a Sami Zayn, like a Jey Uso, like a Cody Rhodes, but also people who have just lost several times to Roman Reigns, like a Kevin Owens, who as now members of the Bloodline are turning babyface. We already saw it with Jey Uso. You can get reactions from sort of like the surrounding, you know, people that are orbiting around the Bloodline. And Owens is always, he was fantastic during the Jey Uso, you know, babyface run. And as soon as I saw this cutaway to Kevin Owens, it clicked for me why they didn't have Kevin Owens turn on Cody at the last pay-per-view. Because they clearly want to save it for this, you know? They want to use the Roman Reigns Association as the reason why Kevin Owens, who's already been shown to be a little bit on edge, why he's going to go over it.
I just love, you had this eight plot that is Roman and Cody getting onto the same page for this common enemy, but then you get this value out of just the ripple effect. Like, how does that impact the other periphery characters? The chief one being Kevin Owens. And that ended up being, you got a whole second hour built around this, and Kevin Owens into the main event, and that was your closing scene. So and even better, then it was the ripple effect. How is this going to affect Giovanni Vinci as well? Because he had to take on Apollo Crews just moments after seeing this video of Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes. And Vinci comes in, and he scoop slams Apollo against the rope three consecutive times, lifts him for a powerbomb, and is rolled up in a minute 37. And Vinci snaps, hitting Cruz with a brainbuster. Baron Corbin has just gone into the abyss, and Giovanni Vinci is 0-2 since his return. Magnificent.
Yeah. So, I mean,
I take it back. This was the big thing everyone's going to be talking about Saturday.
The first time this happened 2 weeks ago, I mean, I was a bit surprised by it, but I was also kind of like, you know, willing to give Levesque the benefit of the doubt, because this is, this seems like really odd booking for his style, you know? And I was almost trusting that he would have something at the end of this to justify this, to make this worthwhile. Now, the second week was not a good follow-up because there was no follow-up. Giovanni Vinci wasn't even mentioned on the show last week, and I thought that that was kind of damning, because it's one of the worst things you can do to follow up something like that by telling the audience that this person isn't even worth reminding you of the week afterwards. So then now we're in week three, and we actually get the rematch, and I don't know what they could have done here to, I guess, fix what they did in the past, but they instead decided to dig themselves into a bit of a deeper hole. And at this point, I just don't know what you could possibly do to salvage Giovanni Vinci. You're basically confirming that the first week was not a fluke and that he is below rank in terms of skill and ability to Apollo Crews, which places Vinci pretty much at, like, I don't know, like a little bit above Dante Chen and like others on like level up. I'm sure even Dante Chen has gotten more wins than Giovanni Vinci at this point. So I just don't know like how they can turn this around at this point, you know, unless they're trying to just create a goofy comedic character. And that would be kind of, I don't know. I'm not so sure that that would be a great look for anybody. But you know what? Does the men's division need a Chelsea Green? Maybe Vinci is that person.
That is the most optimistic line you're going to hear about this. You know, he's only lost twice to Apollo. I mean, this could be a best of series that we're not.
Maybe Apollo Crews just happens to be his kryptonite. And Vinci is actually capable of like beating Cody, beating Roman Reigns. We haven't seen it yet, but we'll always lose to Apollo.
Saxton is bugging Kevin Owens to the point that Michael Cole calls him a pest, and Owens decides, I'll just go out and talk to the arena. So he comes out and he's about to explain his reaction to Cody teaming with Roman when he is interrupted by the Tongans with Jacob Fatu, and Tama comes out. And how would you describe this? This new delivery of Tama Tonga,
I would say he definitely seemed inspired by Ed, the hyena from The Lion King. No,
hey Kevin, what the hell's
that? Would be wonderful if he did
this music video.
Sock impression. No, like I mean, or he seemed to be inspired by this is one of the hyenas from The Lion King. I don't
inspired.
Know.
Inspired. This was basically pantomime.
So like, yeah,
this is not inspiration. This is just sheer like copying.
He was playing a hyena. Yes, he's
no. We wanted you to take on the personality of a hyena, not literally be a hyena.
Yeah, Brian in the chat is saying Beavis. I mean, maybe a little bit of Beavis as well, and I guess that would make Tongaloa butthead.
What a cocktail for people that have not seen this: the hyena from Lion King, Ed the Sock, and Beavis.
So I'll tell you what this was from. Like, there was that 1 week months ago where, like, Tama Tonga doesn't get to speak much, but, like, he was, like, backstage in a segment with the Bloodline, and he did something like this, this sort of, like, deliberate stutter that just kind of took off as this, like, a bit of a meme for, like, a week. And I always thought, like, he could have actually done something with it, and it took him months, but, like, now he's actually getting to. I actually like it. It gives him a distinguishable voice, you know? You wouldn't want him sounding just like, I don't know, like anybody else.
Yeah, I mean, if anyone should be doing a tribute, they should be doing the tribute to Mufasa, right?
Right now, yeah. Yeah, you would.
Okay, well, maybe, you know, Tama Tonga does need a foil, so.
Yeah, I guess I guess Roman would be Mufasa or Solo? I don't know.
Yeah,
Solo would be Scar. Solo would be Scar. Roman is Mufasa, and who's okay. Simba? Jay?
Sure.
All right. Who's Timon and Pumbaa?
I'm not going through The Lion King. I've not watched that movie in 30 years. Tama warns Reigns and Cody they're going to get theirs at Bad Blood, but tonight Owens is getting his, and they attack. Owens fights alone. He knocks the Tongans off the apron, of course, and Fatu is led there alone, but they fight 3-on-1 as DIY run out and immediately are fought off, or they fight off the Bloodline and hit a shatter machine onto Tama Tonga. All this comes out to make a 6-man tag for tonight's main event. So, for all this like concern about Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa, they're going to headline the second week of SmackDown on USA Network. So huge position to put DIY in.
Multiple on-screen appearances on this edition of the show. So big night ahead for DIY.
Game changer.
Yeah.
Naomi is with Bayley. This was an interaction you and I don't think we'll ever have, where they're just like, I can't wait to get that title shot. Wait a minute. I've been waiting too. Okay. May the best woman win. Let's hug. Like, oh my God. Let's just get to the match. They actually showed some highlights of Callum Walsh's win today in Ireland. This aired on Fight Pass. No other reason that I'm bringing this up. But do you know who called this boxing fight today?
Moral?
Nope.
Joe Tessitore.
Corey Erdman.
You're kidding.
Yeah,
wow.
He called this fight today.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Our former colleague from Fight Network. That's awesome.
Nia Jax and Tiffany Stratton against Naomi and Bayley in a tornado match. So if Naomi and Bayley, if they win, the one who scores the fall gets the title shot. If they lose, the one who takes the fall is banished from SmackDown until the next draft. Bayley and Naomi, they go for a double cover early, and Jessica Carr goes to count this, and the announcers are like, what would have happened there? Well, good thing we didn't find out. Naomi gets thrown into the timekeeper's area, then Naomi yanks Bayley off of Stratton when Bayley is going for a cover, and they both look at each other like, wait a minute. And Bayley is then shoved aside by Naomi as Naomi is sacrificed and takes a clothesline from Nia. And then we get a double back body drop from Nia. A seated splash out of the corner goes for the Annihilator, but is stopped. And Jax and Bayley each go for pins at the same time. Both of them kick out. And Jax elevates Naomi. It's turned into an X Factor. And Tiffany tries to break up the pin. But as Naomi gets out of the way, Tiffany lands on her partner, Nia Jax. And with that, Bayley and Naomi hit the 1D onto Tiffany Stratton. Jax runs into both of them, and we get Naomi with a jackknife cover while Bayley simultaneously crucifixes Nia. And wouldn't you know it, we get a double pin with Naomi's feet right here under the ropes. And that's our double pin. Who would have thought? Who would have thought this outcome possible? Unbelievable.
You know, it tends to happen a lot in these sort of build-ups, these sort of situations. But they are, at least at this moment, announcing a triple threat. They are announcing.
No, they're not doing a three-way. At least they are doing a singles match next week. They could they could always do a draw.
I almost see that as the most likely result of next week's match. You know, some form of draw leading us to an actual three-way. So the match received some great reactions from this crowd. Really, everything received really great reactions from this crowd because there were so many people there and everybody was so over to some extent. But when you're grading this match on a technical performance, they had some very ambitious moments planned and they maybe executed to 70% of perfection.
The tornado rules made sense. Like the way they explained it is that why would one of them tag out when there's a title shot at stake? Like I understood there's actually a logical reason for the tornado, but in execution, I thought it just made this such a
difficult,
a lot
dance.
More ambitious. Like it just seemed, it just felt like a really sloppy tag for a lot of it.
There was a lot of very clear waiting around for people to be in their position so they can coordinate with some of these pretty ambitious spots. Poor positioning, certainly for the finish here from Naomi with her feet under the ropes. And I don't blame Naomi for that. It's the fact that Nia and Bayley ended up in this position that, you know, maybe she could have called some audible and not done a jackknife pin. But anyway, that just didn't turn out that well. Just people being out of position in general. So again, not great technically, but I thought the effect of it on the crowd was good. Storytelling was effective. This was a bit different from your typical can they get along type of match, because you never had Bayley and Naomi really turn on each other or come to blows. They were maintaining their friendship throughout the entire thing, and I guess they are teasing us with the idea that these two friends have to face each other one-on-one next week.
We got a random signs in the crowd, really pushing these signs. Bring your signs to the show.
Yeah.
And then we go outside, and Chelsea Green is in like a garbage man's like uniform.
Sanitation worker.
Yes. Sanitation worker. Garbage man. Yeah. Okay. Don't want to offend. At first I thought, is this one of those like Snickers ads that are just, this is a commercial? Like, this was not set up with any context. And it's not like Chelsea really explained what was going on here. She just was insulting Meechan.
Did we miss something last week? Because like the announcers would say afterwards that, they spoke to Nick Aldis and it was Meechan that suggested a dumpster match. And I completely missed it last week.
I don't think this was announced last week. And I didn't see this mentioned anywhere. Because after this, like, she's just outside of a dumpster and is doing all this like physical comedy with a raccoon and a dumpster. And she's working out. I mean, it's Chelsea. Green, I mean, she can make just about anything. She'll give it a go, but I just didn't know what was going on here. And Cole explains to us that in 2 weeks, not 1 week, 2 weeks, Meechan and Chelsea Green are going to have a dumpster match in Nashville.
Right.
As suggested by Vicky Guerrero, they stated last week. Okay.
Was this off screen? Like, it must have happened on a .com exclusive or something, and maybe we should have seen that.
I was like, should this video maybe have aired after Cole's message? Like, that would have made more sense to me.
And why would Vicky suggest a dumpster match? Like, what? Why that particular stipulation?
I had so many questions about a segment that was so short. This was very confusing. But by the end, you were taught all the details. Next week as well, we are going to get, this graphic, I laughed out loud at this. It felt like Veer is coming. Andrade versus Carmelo Hayes, part 6. Andrade is up 3-2.
Like, they're making no attempt to like make any variation on these sort of matches. They're not like adding a stipulation to it. It's just another straight match. Now, to be fair, every time they've done one of these, the crowds have been hotter and hotter for it because they now recognize this is a real feud. Last time, though, they actually had something to fight for. Part 6, I guess, is just what? Like, Carmelo can even it? Like, are people really cheering for that? I don't know. Maybe they've gained enough of a reputation from audiences to recognize it as just, hey, this is going to be a really good match. Maybe that's enough. I don't know.
Why stop at 7? If it's a great match every time out, why stop it?
I don't think maybe they won't. What do you think they'll be fighting for at the end of this? Like, what is game 7 for? Or whenever it's supposed to end?
The winner goes to Raw.
Sure. Slim Siever says, there was a YouTube video last week with Chelsea, Aldis, and Vicky. Vicky suggested the dumpster match and Aldis agreed. All right. So it was an exclusive.
All right. Gotta keep up on those YouTube exclusives.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MCU Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. Tag us in a photo of yourself wearing our merch on social media, and I'll even send you a signed postcard while supplies last. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Bayley and Naomi are with Aldis, and he says the only fair thing to do is they can have a singles match next week, and the winner faces Nia Jax. Owens comes out, but as he's waiting, DIY get jumped backstage, and man, the BCC just destroyed Private Party here, and Owens decides to just go it alone, and DIY, their night was not over yet, and all I could think about throughout this night for these two was being at that Sami Zayn comedy show when they showed up after losing the tag titles an hour before and having to go do this comedy show and just be made fun of for the first 10 minutes. This felt very much like that same tone.
Yeah, these two are only maybe like a few rungs above Giovanni Vinci at this point. You know, like I thought they were Hunter's guys. You know, like, what's going on with these guys? Are they just like, should we be expecting
patience.
Something?
Patience.
Are we doing the thing now where like they're losing so much? One of them's going to turn on the other. Is that what we can hope for at the end of this?
They're going to break up and they're going to have a best of 7 series. And if Gargano wins, he gets his old theme back.
Okay, well, that would be more stakes
that's way better than any championship. So Kevin Owens is fighting them when the Street Profits arrive. Wouldn't you know it? They were just ready to go and here at this show and not booked, but they were there just in case something like this happened. So we get the Bloodline against Owens and the Profits. Some stats here for you, Wei. Kevin Owens has never pinned a Bloodline member. Meanwhile,
right.
Since Solo Sikoa became the tribal chief, the Bloodline have never lost a tag match by pin or submission. That's very specific.
Okay. Yeah. Yes. Okay.
They get the advantage on Ford. Corey Graves explains that Jacob Fatu, I mean, we could never send this guy to Good Morning America or ESPN. I would love to see Jacob Fatu on Good Morning America. Just like doing his praying.
Yeah, yeah.
Mannerism.
I would love to see Jacob Fatu host Good Morning America. You'd never say never. Someday.
What's the battle riot like? It seems like a really intense match. Huh. Dawkins is in, and then he gets beaten to a pulp here through a commercial break. They keep Dawkins away. He catches Fatu with a drop kick after Fatu then launches himself, missing in the corner, hitting the post. Ford is in, but everything leads up to moments later. Owens gets the hot tag, running over Fatu on the floor, splashes Tama Tonga off the apron, and then delivers a cannonball to Tonga Loa before a swanton is hit, but Fatu makes the save, hits the stunner onto Tama, but Loa yanks out Kevin Owens, is thrown into the steps, and after our two-segment match, we get the DQ as Kevin Owens is destroyed.
Why the DQ?
Steps are just... he interfered with the legal man and pulled him out, I guess. We have new precedents.
That's fair in every single tag team match that's ever existed. You know, like you could break up the pin if you're an active participant in the match. And since when have Irish whipping somebody into the steps caused a DQ?
What are the odds that this match was all set up where it's like, okay, we have Tonga Loa. Of course this guy's going to eat the fall. And then someone figured out the stat. Hey, wait a minute. That would be the first time Kevin Owens has ever pinned a Bloodline member. Like, oh, we can't just blow that off here in Sacramento. We can't let him just get his first Bloodline win. How do we get out of this?
Boy, you're telling me that the Tongans can't win?
Obviously not. They
why
must
not?
Have, you don't need to Dawkins and Ford strong. I didn't book this. I didn't come up with a 20-minute match to end with a guy thrown into the steps. So everyone dives, everyone's out, the Bloodline take over, Fatu hits a splash onto Ford, and then, Jesus Christ, out come Gargano and Ciampa. Collectively, they have half of an ACL between them. They're limping and hobbling, and they make their way down the aisle right into Jacob Fatu's super kicks. These guys were of no help to these guys. Like, just stay in the back. You're doing more harm than good. This was an awful night for DIY. Don't do it yourself, okay? No. Double DIY.
Hire somebody else.
Owens is laid out on the mat, and after an hour, Cody Rhodes finally makes his way out. I guess maybe he got on the chopper from Georgia Tech and made it here in the final minute. Comes out with a chair, goes face-to-face with Fatu, and hits him with a Cody cutter. And there, his back is to Owens. Owens has the chair. What's he going to do? And Cody turns around. Owens puts down the chair, and the two men hug and shake hands to end the show. But a recreation of last month when he had the title belt.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess, continuing to reheat up the story of whether or not Owens is actually going to turn on Cody. They are teasing it. And I would say at this point, I think they're doing a good job of it on this episode. You know, they're kind of really spelling it out for everybody, but they're dragging it out. So you don't know the exact moment where it's going to happen. And when it finally happens, I think we're all going to explode. And Kevin Owens is going to be hopefully that much stronger of a heel and stronger of a character in general. I wasn't like the match was good. It had good action. I think good atmosphere. So all of those things were like made it valuable. But I had like kind of negative interest in seeing it as a main event. Like there were no stakes attached to it. Nothing attached to the outcome. Clearly, like there was a DQ attached to it. So like they didn't think that it was for anything. No real anticipation built for it. And no real stars, really, I would say, attached to it either. You know, Jacob Fatu, I think you could argue maybe is approaching there, but I didn't think it was a satisfying main event in terms of anticipation or just me caring about it. But, you know, this closing angle was done for like a good purpose here, teasing the Cody and Owens thing. I thought overall, what did you think about the match?
It felt the crowd did a lot for the main event. Like, this was a pretty pretty easy to please crowd. They were pretty hot for all of the characters. The match, I can't go much above. It was fine.
And that's been the case for a lot of SmackDown matches because I don't know, the roster just isn't as interesting.
I wouldn't say any of the matches, and Andrade LA Knight included, like, I would just state, like, you know, of, you look at the end of the week and it would be like, what would be your short list of matches to recommend to someone? Like, I'm not mm-hmm. recommending any of these. Like, there's good character work. They had that, you know, a super production for Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns, and it is, the Bloodline is like the A story that's going on, I think, in the company, or at least close to it if Punk and Drew is maybe your top program. But nonetheless, they have the stars, they are doing great business.
And they have Andrade versus Carmelo pretty
every
much
every week,
single week,
or at least every other week. So yeah. That was, that was it. I didn't think a show to write home about, but in terms of like the stories, a lot of the stories are over at the moment.
I'll say this felt above average in terms of like recent SmackDowns, which for the most part have not been very good and pretty lacking in star power. This felt above average because we got this Cody and Roman video. You know, this was certainly like by far the most significant thing on the show. Felt like a good reason to actually, like, you know, have your time valued if you chose to watch it. And felt big, you know, this, like, I definitely think Drew and Punk is the main event. But I mean, this is actually making a really strong case for why you would put this at last, because you have the two men who have done the most ever for wrestling in Atlanta, a man who owns a stadium and a man who owns a city. All right. What could be bigger than that? So, yeah, that was great. Other than that, I mean, it was fine. It was a okay show with a really great crowd.
And just one note from Rampage tonight. They did officially add Saraya and Jamie Hayter for Grand Slam next Wednesday. So
Saraya and Hayter. And also they also had announced Mariah May and Yuka.
That's right. They announced that right after Dynamite. So with all the matches they've announced there, I think you're going to get a split among Dynamite and Collision next week, because they are taping both Collision and next week's Rampage tomorrow to do 4 hours on Wednesday of Dynamite Collision.
Now, what is the sling belt that Tony is booking in the event Bryan Danielson asterisk could not make it?
He's got to have his version of the Street Profits that are just ready to go at all times.
Right. All right.
Maybe he'll have Miro ready in the go position.
Okay. Against Nigel?
Anyone. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Cool.
All right, we'll open up the phone lines. If you want to get in a question or a piece of feedback, the time is all yours.
That's right, everybody. On Fridays, we open up the phone lines and we get live calls from all of our patrons over at postwrestlingcafe.com. This is the only time out of the week that, other than our pay-per-views, I guess, but those are also patron-exclusive as well. But every single week, we're here on Fridays, and we give this space to our loyal listeners to just talk about whatever they want wrestling related. So let's start things off with a frequent caller, somebody we appreciate every single time they call. John, are you cool?
I'm good for now. I'm good. Okay, excellent. I'm good for now.
You have the open pass. It's been a long day for John. So, but for now, we have him, and we also have Andy B. Welcome to the show, Andy.
Hi, guys. Hope you're well. Hope you've had a good week.
You too, Andy.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Guys, so I just wanted to say, I've been a little up and down on the WWE TV after WrestleMania, but like, I feel like stuff is starting to pick up quite nicely after the SummerSlam build. Like, they're doing a really good job with like some of these stories. Like, they're really well written, right? It's almost like they've mapped out these characters over a long time, at some point, even like 2-3 years. Even stuff like Finn Balor and Damian Priest, while like it's taking a backseat to Rhea Ripley, like you can see how the story ties into like all of the tension they were teasing like during Money in the Bank 2023, and doing a great job writing it. And like, one of the most impressive things about it has been the fact that these stories are starting to become invisible camera proof. So like, a lot of time you see things on wrestling shows and it's like, these two guys interact here, but like the other characters wouldn't know if they watch the show, right? But I think stories like The Judgment Day And especially the New Day stuff, which is my favorite story they're telling at the moment, is all been told in a very sophisticated fashion for wrestling standards. I think there's been this notion that the current WWE product is just the same thing, but just a little bit more coherent. I think more hardcore wrestling fans have to give it credit for what it started to become as of late.
Right. Sorry. So just to maybe repeat, what you're suggesting here is that this feels in many ways like the same product, at least in terms of production, like with the invisible camera, but the fans are respecting it more. Is that what you're suggesting, Andy?
No way. I'm saying usually in wrestling, when you do invisible camera skits, a lot of the time, you lead the stories where things play out in such a way that a conflict could be avoided if the characters just watch the show, right?
Okay.
I feel right. When you watch these shows now, the characters are kind of affirmed in their belief of what's happened in these invisible camera skits. So I think these stories are now being written in a really good fashion. And I think it's been a drastic, drastic improvement even on what they were doing in 2023.
It's a much better show now than it was. Maybe even in the initial stages of the quote unquote the Levesque era. Yeah, it's for the most part a pretty cohesive show. Some things are still questionable. I think there are still weaknesses about the Triple H era, including you point to the mid card of the women's division. I would say you point to the main event of the women's division even on SmackDown. Certainly the tag team division I think deserves a lot of criticism on either show. You know, what they're doing with Giovanni Vinci, I don't know. There are definitely still weaknesses, but overall, it's a better show, yes.
All right. My one last question would be, are you guys expecting Kevin Owens to turn heel? I think what's going to happen, my prediction is, I think Kevin Owens, he's kind of fighting himself and, he eventually wins and he's able to shake hands with Cody and move it on and move on with his career. But when it comes to Randy Orton, I think in his desperate chase for one last championship in his age and with his body failing him, I think he succumbs to temptation and he turns on Cody. So you have this contrast between these two guys, one guy who's had this character development and one guy who's regressed in the face of adversity. Hmm. And you can even have a feud between the both of them on the back of this premise. And I think that's a more interesting story to tell than Kevin just turning. What do you guys think?
I think that's an interesting point. Do you get both Orton and Owens, turning heel at some point throughout the course of the year? Would that be almost too predictable? But I don't know. I just see Owens, though, having so much upside. More importantly, I don't know where Kevin Owens can go as a babyface character at this point. Whereas turning him heel, I think, refreshes him so much and makes him that serious, intimidating, especially if he's turning on Cody, makes him a main event level type of heel. As a babyface, as he currently exists, he's got a ceiling, and it's number three to Cody Rhodes, Randy Orton, maybe even LA Knight above him, and then you got somewhere where Kevin Owens exists. What do you think, John?
I think that if all things are equal, I think that you're starting to get the pieces in place of what could be the Roman Reigns team for War Games. And I think Kevin Owens would be a logical one to be in the mix there as kind of this loose cannon that has his attachment to Cody and this, existing rivalry with Roman Reigns. But to me, the big caveat here is the fact that Kevin Owens does have a contract coming up as well. And you're going to want to have this guy locked in before you make your, we're getting not too far away from your Mania season. And if you're going to go, with your big story here. And I think that's going to dictate things with Kevin Owens. If they get him locked up, then it's all systems go. But that's going to be a big factor in all of this, of how far you go with him.
Thank you very much, Andy, for the call.
I'll ask just one last question before I run, guys.
Sure.
Okay. So with Kevin Owens' contract coming up, would you guys have a preference as to what you would like to see him do? I think at this point, he's been in WWE for so long. I think I would personally prefer him to jump ship to AEW, where he can work in a slightly more unrestrained environment, and he can bleed and he can have more freedom on his promos and work with all of these guys, do a Mount Rushmore reunion or whatever else. Thanks so much and have a great one.
Thanks, Andy. As a fan, as somebody who maybe is excited to see what the unknown might be for Kevin Owens, yeah, I also want to see him in AEW. But I think if you're Kevin Owens, you have a lot more to consider beyond just like, I don't know, pleasing a fan like myself. Like you have to do what's best for your family. That's first and foremost. Secondly, I mean, if his goal is to be at the top of the WWE, does being away while he's 40 right now, potentially for, I don't know, at least a 3-year contract or something like that. Does he say goodbye to ever, you know, again, like main eventing WrestleMania or like ever being champion again by the time he might eventually return? What are his goals? Has he achieved truly his goals yet? Yes, he's like technically main evented WrestleMania, but I don't know, like, if the tickets were necessarily being sold on him, and does he have a bigger ambition than what he's already achieved within the WWE? What do you think?
I don't think there's a bad decision for him. I would honestly, if he was looking between both, he's going to have wherever he goes, he's going to make the timing is outstanding. Like, coming off of this deal that AEW is about to lock in and the revenue that's going to be coming in for them, they're going to have the ability to make him an incredible offer. And WWE is not being, they will be aggressive as well. So I think it comes down to what is going to bring you the career fulfillment for you. Like, what is, like, you have like this core of people you've been working with for a decade. Maybe that is most advantageous to you. Maybe you have designs on a post wrestling career that means broadcasting or working at the performance center that might lean you towards that. Like, maybe you want a change of scenery. Like, it's, I don't think there's a bad choice for him. And I think, you know, some of the, you know, areas of what Andy mentioned there, like, he has a ton of creative freedom in WWE too. I would not say this is a time where you were so restricted, and I think he's a very valuable commodity as WWE sees him, and AEW would too. So it's really what do you want to do? Because I don't think there's a bad option in the two for him.
I agree. Let's go lastly here to Brandon from New Jersey. How's it going, Brandon?
Hey, can you hear me? What's going on, guys? Can you hear me? Oh man, a beautiful weekend about to start. Are you guys excited?
Are you like on the watch list or something? Are you like undercover? Are you talking to us like under a blanket or something? We can barely hear you.
I'm on the freaking
better.
The StreamYard app. It redirected me to the app, and I signed on in here. I hate it.
You sound great now. You sound good now.
I elevated my phone. Thank you. I listened to Rewind the Way. Great episode.
We know.
And you were talking about the psychosis of Vince McMahon briefly, and I was just like curious, like what do you? I mean, with the documentary coming up and like rewatching these old episodes, like it's just, and you briefly touched on it, like it's like just so bizarre, like how, like I don't think anyone scratched the surface on how like dark this human being is that made these like the creative force behind these stories, like this guy like created. It's like, I don't know, it's just like so bizarre how this guy is, like am I overthinking or
what's the question?
I don't know, no, it's not a question, it's just like
no, I get what you're like meaning, like in this context of what is now known and out there on Vince McMahon, I think you can rewatch a lot of this older stuff and it does resonate differently at the time, in hindsight, and I think just looking back on it that there is stuff that is I think more disturbing now when you're getting into not just the idea that this was the creative force for the company, but also had acquired an entire staff that knew that it was writing for the audience of one, for this guy's sense of humor and what he felt was, what he was looking for in his programming. And I think like you can go through any of these episodes and they're gonna feel different and touch different than they did at the time, and maybe not even so. Like when you go back and look at some of the stuff that he was involved in,
So even the trailer is suggesting that it's going to sort of answer some form of that question. How much of how much is the Mr. McMahon character, and how much of it has bled over into his real life self? And again, it's sort of a chicken or the egg situation. Like, were they creating the Vince McMahon character, and did somehow the real life Vince McMahon adopt those character traits, or was the Vince McMahon character on screen simply a reflection of the Vince McMahon that already existed in real life? I hope the documentary gives us a fair assessment of that question. So we'll find out in a week.
Are you going to be watching the series, Brandon?
Oh, no doubt about it. 100%. Like, I'm just curious about like the, I mean, I don't care about like how he started WWE. I'm curious about like, you know, like what brought upon the situation and where we're at right now. Like, and there's like so many people that are complicit to this. Like, there's like nobody stepped up and said, you know, this isn't a good idea or anything like that. Everybody went along with it. Like, I'm just curious about all that stuff as well. Like, I don't know.
We don't know like who might have or who might not have. We also don't know what sort of pressures they might have been under to oppose. Kind of hard to say.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's all I got. I was just curious about that. Hope you guys have a good weekend, and that's it. See you later.
Have a good night.
Thank you. I feel like you had more to say.
I forgot. I didn't write it down.
I feel like there's something random you were going to bring up.
I actually, like, you know, in all seriousness, like, while you guys were talking about the callers, I kind of dozed off and took a nap. And then I heard,
sounded like you were lying down when you were the call.
I heard, it was like the voice of God way. It was like, oh, our last caller, Brandon from New Jersey. I was like, oh, shit, you know, I better wake up and, you know, talk, or else Way's going to hang up on me. But that's all I got, man.
We appreciate hearing from you either way, always.
Love you guys, man. You know that. Right, how do you hang up on this thing?
Never mind.
Give me a...
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right, goodbye. Failure there on my part. All right, let's go to some feedback here. You know who we're going to hear from first?
Let's go to DC Germain.
Germaine.
Oh, sorry, Chicago. Chicago.
Germaine from Chicago. Is it me, or does SmackDown look lower in production quality on USA versus Fox? I feel like I can tell the difference. I wish I could handle TSA members the way Jacob Fatu did security coming into the building. SmackDown was an okay show this week. It could use another hour. I enjoyed the LA Knight Andrade match. In-ring isn't Knight's strong suit, so you have to grade him on a curve. The women's match pin felt bad to me. It seemed Jessica Carr had to count to 15. Okay, let me speak on this Roman Reigns promo. How is this man a babyface? He has never said sorry once for cheating and gang attacking babyfaces for 3 years. Why couldn't Cody just find someone else? You know, like Orton and KO? If losing has consequences, how is Solo still the head of the bloodline? I'm not feeling Roman as a babyface, and he might need a mouthpiece. Lastly, how do you see the Lucha Brothers doing in the WWE, and will they wrestle outside the Latino division? Thanks. Have a great weekend. Who are the current Latino champions? What's the Latino division?
Well, he's suggesting, I guess, like something involving, I guess, the LWO and, like, I guess, the Latino members of the Judgment Day. Okay. As some form of unofficial Latino division, or before that, I guess, what is it? Legado and LWO. I don't know how to answer that. Hey, by the way, it wasn't Cody or Roman who suggested the match, right? Like, didn't somebody else suggest the match? Like, was it Solo that suggested
it? Was
the match?
Nick Aldis was the one who wanted to get them to sign the contract.
And yeah, Cody, but it was no. It was a challenge made by Sokola,
Solo.
I'm pretty
yes,
sure.
Yes, yes.
So it wasn't like Cody was choosing Roman.
Yeah, they were backed into this.
Yeah, I couldn't tell any production quality difference at all.
No, if anything, tonight was like that Georgia Tech shoot was one of the most ambitious.
Yeah, and how is Roman a babyface? Well, the audience really likes him. That's how he's a babyface. Okay. All right, lastly, let's go to Brian in New Jersey, who says, one match within the first 45 minutes or so of the show, but I thought it was a good one at least. Andrade has really been delivering. Solid tag matches to close with a lot of energy in them. Pretty low in star power overall. Hypothetically, since none of this seems confirmed yet, who do you see showing up on WWE TV first? Lucha Brothers, the Motor City Machine Guns, or returning Rusev?
I mean, okay, Rusev hasn't been released yet, so I mean, we're getting ahead of ourselves here. I think that the Machine Guns probably would be the most pressing one that you would see first.
I agree. In NXT, you think?
I think that's a possibility. Like, certainly, I think those CW shows you'd be looking at, unless they, I mean, want to put them in this thriving tag division. Maybe they could come in and just play DIY. Like, we don't even do a transfer over. It's like, oh, look at, it's Ciampa and Gargano. They got haircuts.
NXT is the place to be for them. They'll get a tremendous reaction at the Performance Center from audiences that will treat them like big stars, and that in turn will hopefully translate to a main roster debut at some point. If they appeared cold on the main roster, I would expect them to be DIY in about 3 months.
All right. It's the Windy City Machine Guns.
I feel like we have enough for Chicago.
Yeah. All right. That's going to wrap things up, but thank you to all for tuning in to this edition of Rewind to SmackDown. Again, we do this every Friday night for members at postwrestlingcafe.com. $6 gets you 30 days access to the cafe, and in addition to your support of Post Wrestling, it includes weekly Rewind to SmackDowns, weekly Collision Course shows on Saturday with John and Kate, and this month, we're doing 6 days in a row covering the Mr. McMahon series, beginning next Friday, and then daily shows Saturday through the following week here on the cafe. Plus, next weekend, Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson will cover Destruction in Kobe. Agatha All Along is going to be going on for the next many months as the episodes are dropping on Disney Plus. Whether it's one episode per week, whether they drop 2 episodes on you, Rich Fan and WH Park will have you covered.
What'll end first, Agatha All Along or Andrade versus Carmelo Hayes?
Agatha All Along.
Yeah, probably. All right.
All right. And if you want to go backwards, our Rewind Away that we were just talking about dropped on Thursday, covering Raw, a wretched edition of Raw. I have no complaints about tonight's SmackDown when we have this 2004 era that I do not want to relive. But it did have a pretty great main event with Trish Stratus and Lita, and the makings of what would be one of the great programs in WWE history that was just starting to grow with Batista and his slow burn towards leaving Evolution.
And let's not forget Chris Jericho's Rock and Roll Limbo at Go-Go, starring the WWE women's division of the time.
Yes. And how you can get from a limbo contest to a promo about 9/11.
quite remarkable.
How do they get there? So go ahead, download the show, get laid by listening to Rewind Away. Number 165.
That will make sense, trust me, if you listen to the podcast. Okay.
On that note, thank you. Thank you to all the freeloaders, as WH Park would call them. Jump on at postwrestlingcafe.com. Collision Course is coming your way Saturday night, and Way and I will be back Monday after Raw. This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, Wei Ting and I are reviewing the Mr. McMahon series on Netflix with 6 straight days of reviews. The Double Shot will be coming back on Friday, September the 27th. We will be doing a free review of episode 1, and then episodes 2 through 6 will be covered exclusively for Post Wrestling Cafe members. Plus, this month, MCU Later is back covering Agatha All Along, and Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson have you covered for New Japan's Destruction in Kobe. PostWrestlingCafe.com.